This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For most kids in this country, the transition from teenager to adult is slow, and for many, it's getting slower. Grown children often delay leaving home until well after graduation, relying on their parents to help them navigate the complex world of rent, health care costs, and all the rest of their living expenses. For many as 20,000 teenagers a year, though, that is not an option. There is no mom or dad to provide that financial cushion. And for them, the transition from teen to adult is as abrupt as a single birthday. Foster care systems are set up to get children out of dangerous situations, but for kids who remain in the system, an adolescence that may be spent bouncing from home to home with little stability is hardly the best preparation for assuming total responsibility at age 18, or in some states, 21. According to a recent study, foster kids who age out are far more likely to wind up homeless, in the criminal justice system, or in a struggle with drug addiction. Later in the program, legendary folklorist Stetson Kennedy joins us as the StoryCorps begins a national tour. But first, aging out. If you grew up in foster care, what was it like to be released from the system? Were you ready? What would have helped? Call us with your story. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. The new documentary, Aging Out, takes an in-depth look at the lives of three foster care kids who are discharged from the system. Later in the program, we'll talk with the filmmaker. But joining us now is Daniela Rinhover, one of the young people featured in the movie. She left foster care willingly at the age of 20 with her infant son. She joins us now from member station KCUR in Kansas City, Missouri, where she's on a speaking tour for the film. Nice to have you with us on Talk of the Nation.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
How old were you when you entered the system?
I was 16 years old.
And what were the circumstances? So tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, I entered foster care at 16 after I went to school and reported the abuse that was going on in my home to my English teacher, at which point he referred my case to my guidance counselor, and as they say, the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you were in a terrible situation at home. Was foster care better?
Foster care was better for certain things. I was not prepared for living with 12 perfect strangers. When I entered foster care, I went straight into a group home because of my age. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes adoption is not considered for older youth in foster care because most foster parents are not willing to take someone who they consider older and less likely to help with the quote problems, end quote. So I moved from group home in the New York City foster care system and eventually made the decision to start a family with my husband. And he being in the foster care system as well, we were placed in separate foster homes, and I began the journey of leaving foster care because I felt foster care was not providing my family with what we needed, which was stability for my son.
Now, once you decided to leave the system and opted out, you were, what, 20 years old at the time?
Yes, I was.
Was there any help for you? Was there any, here's a guide?
Well, interestingly enough, there isn't a guide. I met a lot of resistance to my determination to leave the foster care system. I was told that I should stay, that I should take advantage of the system. And I decided very early on that I was not looking at it from this entitlement point of view where I'm entitled to these services. I was looking for stability. I was looking for my ability to move out on my own at 21, and I realized that finances were a major part of that. And being in the foster care system for me became my tool to get me into society with as much money in a savings account and with the tools I needed to have a job and go to school so I would finish my college education. And unfortunately, as is showcased in the Aging Out documentary, the foster care system actually provided more obstacles for me than providing me actual tangible assistance to do that.
We want to hear your stories. If you were in foster care and aged out, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's begin with David. David's with us from Edison, New Jersey.
Hi. How are you today?
Very well, thanks.
I wish I'd gotten a chance to see the documentary. I didn't. My experience, though, from what I was telling your screener, if you want to call it aged out, I was released from foster care in New York State after graduating high school, although I did that at 16. So I was pretty much thrown out into the world at the age of 16 with absolutely no preparation for it, whatever. Couldn't get any college money. Because I couldn't sign on my own and due to the family circumstance, couldn't get any help from them. So I ended up pretty much bumming around for a year, and then I joined the service.
And was that – I'm trying to think. I mean, there couldn't have been many options open to you.
There were practically none. I ended up finding a room in the town I grew up in and worked in a grocery store until I turned 17 and then I joined the military.
So you could then sign the papers yourself?
Yes.
Yeah. And how did that work out?
I did 20 years, got my college education, received a commission, and retired.
I wonder, Daniela, does David's story sound familiar?
Yes, very much so. We actually have a very good friend. My husband and I, being both in group homes, we have many friends and know that story very well. Most of the youth that we experienced foster care with, which are really like our brothers and sisters, have ended up in the military and are currently serving in Iraq. Others, unfortunately, have not made it and will be homeless until they take, you know, control of their lives and start realizing that there are other options. And unfortunately, there's not a guide given to a youth that's either entering or leaving the foster care system. So oftentimes it's really taking initiative and realizing you need to be in control of your own life. You're in control of your destiny. And
absolutely
foster care
right.
does not provide you with that mentality. So it's like completely being, you know, your hand being held the entire time you're in the system. And at 16 or 18 or 21, then that hand lets go and says, okay, now go out into the world and fend for yourself. So It's a daunting task.
David, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I wonder, David went into the military and spent 20 years there. You left foster care with, a new husband and a small baby. I mean, that couldn't have been easy.
Well, it wasn't easy, but it was a decision that I made. I realized that what was most important to me was not repeating a cycle that brought me into foster care. And that meant my husband and I making proactive choices for our family, and leaving the foster care system was the first step for us to become proactive and to really take on the parenting role instead of waiting for, you know, a check or some form of assistance. It was, we need to do this on our own. And it really pushed us out into the world on our own. And we eventually needed to get some assistance from the welfare system, but it was assistance. It wasn't someone doing it for us. It was literally assistance, a helping hand as opposed to
a handout.
You know, a handout, exactly.
Joining us now is Roger Weisberg, the filmmaker whose documentary, Aging Out, follows the stories of three young people in foster care, Daniela Rinhover among them, as they leave the system for good and try to survive on their own. He's with us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
We've heard a bit of Daniela's story. You tell the stories of two other people. Briefly, can you tell us how they fared when, it's funny, you never use the word graduation, they graduated, they aged out. Yeah.
Sure. One of the young people was a young man named David, and David had been in foster care since he was an infant. He talks about bouncing around to 20 different foster homes, not really having any identifiable mother or father. He ages out at age 18, but because he had a prior arrest, the probation authorities required him to stay in a group home until he graduated from high school. He never made it to his graduation. He went AWOL, and To make a long story short, David experienced both homelessness and incarceration when he was no longer part of the system. Mm. And at the end of the film, he's seen once again running away from the authorities and hitchhiking across America. The other person that we profiled was Risa Bejarano. She was a Latina from Los Angeles who was the first member of her family to get past the eighth grade. She went on to graduate from high school, looked like she was the most likely to succeed of anyone you could imagine. She got 6 scholarships to attend the University of California at Santa Barbara, and everything was looking so promising in her life when she aged out at age 18 and went off to college. However, during her freshman year of college, she couldn't stay away from the drugs that were plentiful. She had grown up in a family surrounded by drugs and substance abuse. She, by her own admissions, was doing every conceivable drug except heroin. She also suffered a complete emotional breakdown during her freshman year and ended up in the psych ward of a local hospital. It looked like she was getting things back on track in the film. By the end of the film, she had moved back in with her former foster mother, who was no longer receiving any support to look after Risa, and making plans to move into an independent living program, her own apartment. Mm-hmm. However, Risa bounced around between her former foster mother's house, this independent living program, and the home of some of her siblings who were gang members and involved in a pretty tough street life in East Los Angeles. And very sadly, Risa was homeless towards the, 9 months after the completion of filming, Risa was briefly homeless, living out of her car, and was sadly shot and murdered in an alley in East Los Angeles. So we've dedicated the film to her memory and the goal of making a safer transition for young people leaving foster care.
We're talking about what happens to kids who age out of the foster care system. When we come back, a new study that says it's rarely good. If you've gone through this experience, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For most teens, turning 18 opens up the right to smoke, vote, get drafted, get a tattoo. But for youth in foster care, 18 is generally their ticket out of the system and too often into all kinds of new problems. Today we're talking about what happens to those young people. We want to hear your stories if you've been through this experience or helped someone going through it. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Our guests are Roger Weisberg, a writer and producer of the documentary Aging Out, and Daniela Rinhover, who's one of the foster children whose story he follows in the documentary. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, and let's take a call. This is Sherry in Buffalo, New York.
Hi. I was a foster child, and I was institutionalized from the time I was about, the first time is when I was an infant, and then I was given back to my birth mother from the age of about 8 to 12, and then taken back into the system due to the severe abuse. I end up going from foster home to foster home. It ends up being about 17 of them, more or less. Tried to add them up a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And then I consider aging out, though, a little different. I considered it at the age of 14 when I stopped having private homes, stopped having people that said, hi, I'm your mom, hi, I'm your dad. I started being institutionalized, and that's what I considered aging out, because they put me into a large home with like 40 other girls, and then you have to survive in that environment. You're severely institutionalized with things in this county. They would give us, you know, everybody was pretty much on Valium, or they had them on other drugs like Malaril or Stelazine. Some of the girls they had even on Thorazine. And I realized as I was getting older that this was more a control factor. I interpreted it as that. Then eventually, after I would keep running away or disappearing back up, they put me in a new place. Eventually, I ended up in group homes. And for me, my final aging out was at 17 when I decided to just run away and marry the first person that said they loved me and end up in a terrible abusive relationship, end up going to how many high schools? By then it was I think because of all the moves, they would switch my high school, probably about 7 high schools. So I never graduate. I finally get my GED at 21 after going through the abusive marriage. But the big thing is I'm now an attorney in New York State. And one of the reasons I became an attorney was because I was so angry at the system and how they treated everybody in the system. So I'm a defense lawyer, of course, and I also do a lot of pro bono work. But the biggest thing that I see right now for these kids and what I went through is there's no system for us to kind of have like a bridge. Mm-hmm. And eventually, if I ever could figure out a way that I really want to make money, I could open a not-for-profit and help with some sort of bridging, because we need a bridge that goes from all of this crazy emotional, mental, and a lot of us were physically abused, too, you know, and sexually abused, coming not only through the system, but before the system and through our own personal, you know, birth parents, if we knew them or at all. And then we have to go forward somehow and overcome this. And then people in society don't understand, you know, where you're coming from, because they look at you, and especially me, they see me with a degree and they think I've had a silver spoon in my mouth all my life. So they don't, you know, they don't relate when you might get very angry at watching someone walk over maybe a homeless person and you say, what'd you do that for? What's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And or said dirty things or talk down about people who might be on drugs or addicted, because of the last home that I lived in, there was 6 of us in that home. Of the 6 of us, 2 of them are in jail, 2 are seriously, seriously addicted and out on the streets, but just, you know, mentally ill. And the one girl we lost to pornography way back when, and we don't know what happened from there to stripping and, you know, pornography and et cetera.
Sure.
And it's just like, and sometimes I actually I have a lot of guilt over having been what would be considered in that system successful.
Well, Sherry, all we can do is hope that you make a whole lot of money.
No, I don't want to. What help? I have no desire to make a lot of money unless I do not-for-profit work, like you said, and so I can finance other kids and scholarships. But we need health help, you know, with these kids. And we need not to be just turned into the street at 18. Mm-hmm. You know, we need somewhere that there can be a transitional place where they can drop in, be comfortable, talk about their problems, not be embarrassed, you know, and get more assistance without having to go to welfare or just homelessness.
Thank you very much for the call. And your story is both inspirational and scary.
You're not kidding.
Thanks again. Daniela, she was talking about the difficulties of living in a group home, and you were saying you weren't prepared to live with a whole bunch of perfect strangers as well. Did you run into some of those same problems?
Absolutely. Fortunately, I was always outspoken and got into a lot of altercations with my staff, and therefore I was never abused in the way that she had described. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes the young ladies that I lived with were, you know, emotionally abused, physically abused by some of the male staff and even some of the female staff. And one of the reasons I moved around so much is because I was very vocal about what my rights were and how I felt I needed to be treated. And that was one of my saving graces, if you will. I've actually had to dodge being medicated so many times, and it usually meant me having to move and start all over, change high schools, find new people to associate with. And oftentimes there were members of the community that were, you know, drug dealers or drug users, homeless, or, you know, dropouts. And I eventually realized that I needed to take control of my life. And the foster care system, again, was not going to prepare me to do that. That's something I had to look deep within and find within myself. And
is that the advice you would give kids in foster care now, to take control of your own life?
Absolutely. I think once a child, whether they are 6, 12, or 15, they need to be sat down and told what exactly foster care is. Foster care is not a replacement for your parent. They are not, the institution within itself is not prepared to be humane. It's a system, it's an institution, and there's red tape, and there's a lot of there are a lot of variables within that. And you may find a good social worker, and you may not. You may find staff that are abusive, and there are some great staff in between. So it's really allowing yourself to deal with your pain by saying, okay, I realize this has happened to me, and I am going to now have to work through this. I'm going to have to take a personal journey and say, this has happened. I will deal with it, but I also need to move forward while I'm dealing with it.
Roger Weisberg, I wanted to ask you, as you obviously you chose the stories, the people about whose stories you would tell in this movie. We're surprised, aren't we? Kids always surprise us.
They do. And one of the most surprising things is the resiliency that people like Daniela and your caller, Sherry, have, despite suffering the most horrific abuse and neglect. And this was the quality that I noticed in all of the young people we followed. In making the film, we followed a total of 10 people for a year and a half as they went through this difficult transition. And what was amazing was that they could call on some inner strength that, despite the scars of their troubled childhoods, enabled them to cope and, in some cases, overcome. But I want to add to what Daniela said, because I don't think it's just a matter of self-help and pulling yourselves up by your bootstraps. I think that these young people moving into adulthood need the same things that all young people need. They need a sense of security, ideally a sense of being loved. They need a safe place to live, and they need connections to caring adults, and that's the single most important and often most lacking thing. So I think that it's incumbent on our policymakers, but also individual citizens who can be a mentor to a young person, who can be a foster parent, who can be an employer to these young people, to give a helping hand and to offer them the kinds of supports that we take for granted in providing for our own children.
Daniela, I wanted to thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Daniela Rinhofer, former foster child, who's featured in the new documentary Aging Out. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Paul. Paul's calling from Reno, Nevada.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Went into a boys' ranch at age 14, and then into a foster home, which I ran away from, and wound up in another boys' ranch, and then dropped out of high school in the service. The point I have is that if a kid's reasonably bright and they're 16 years old, they should just go ahead and get the kid's his GED if he's reasonably good at reading and basic mathematics, and get him into a junior college or a college. High school for somebody who's kind of an outsider, even if they're athletic or reasonably bright or whatever, it doesn't work very well. It's not a great experience. It's much more important they get a heads-up look, like Daniela was saying.
Well, it sounds like you did not have caring adults in your life.
No. Fortunately, my dad was willing to sign the papers to put me in the service at 17, but I'd moved around enough that I couldn't get a high school degree by 18. And, you know, since the interest of the institution was just to keep kids who weren't too much trouble longer, they said, well, I'll just sign up until you're 21 to live here, and that way you can finish high school. Sure.
Did it start feeling like prison?
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically it's more like cattle. The foster home, we had a large home, and it was an upstairs. It was finished out, and we're just a way to make a, you know, kind of a larger house payment to a fairly high degree. But the other thing I want to make a point on is the boys ranch that really had an impact on me. I was only about 7 or 8, 9 months, was staffed by young Mennonites who were conscientious objectors, who had great beliefs and values, and they were the example you wanted to follow. But, you know, fundamentally, these were guys from small towns who believed everyone was worth, you know, something.
They had a great influence, but then you signed up to join the Army.
And they had no human service degree. And I went to this other boys' ranch where every, you know, house parent had a, some kind of degree in human service. And, yeah, there were a few, you know, foster parents or house parents who cared, but for the most part, there was this very clinical treatment of the kid and this way of interacting. It was much better to be treated like someone's bratty little brother than someone's clinical case.
I can see. Yeah.
So, point is that it is like cattle, and if you could get the, you know, the fairly bright kids or even the kids who just have an interest in anything started in something before they leave, it's better than letting them hit the water out there without, you know, without having the life skills.
Paul, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
What are you doing today, by the way?
Installing trim in my living room.
Well, is that what you do for a living, installing trim?
Oh, no. No. I have a real job. I'm a commercial real estate appraiser.
Huh. All right. So you made it out.
Yeah, I have a graduate degree and all that good stuff. But they should start them younger.
Thanks for the call, Paul.
Thank you.
We're talking about life after foster care. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Mark Courtney, director of the Chapin Hall Center for Children at the University of Chicago. He's the author of a new study on how young adults fare when they leave the foster care system. He's with us from our bureau in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And I know you've been listening earlier in the program to the stories of Danielle and the various people who've called up. I wonder, how well do they fit into what you found with your study of kids coming out of foster care?
Well, everybody has a unique story, I think, of folks who spent time in foster care. I think that each of them represent different aspects of that experience. I think one thing that we found in our study that's really important that a couple of people have alluded to thus far is it depends on what do you mean by aging out. And I think one thing that the audience should understand is that in most places in this country, at the age of 18 or shortly thereafter, the child welfare system dismisses its legal responsibility for the care of young people who have been in out-of-home care, in foster homes or group homes or whatever. Danielle, in fact, by remaining in care past her 20th birthday, you know, she talks about the struggle to get out of the system and mm-hmm. want to be on her own. But the reality is in most places in the country, she wouldn't have been in the system at 20 at all. She would have been discharged from care long before that. So I think that's one important dimension. But I think a lot of the other things these people talk about, the challenges they've had, you know, some of the mental health problems they've had along the way, the limited education they, you know, brought with them to the system in many cases and left with is fairly typical of what we find.
And limited options, what did you find out happened to kids after they left foster care?
Well, when we're talking to them, we'll be following them for a while, but at this point we've talked to them when they were 17 and when they were about 19, 19 and a half. And for example, when they were 19 and a half, over a third of them had no high school diploma. They were much less likely than other 19-year-olds to be employed. And in fact, even if they were employed, the overwhelming majority were earning poverty-level wages. About a half of the females had been pregnant at some point in their life, and one-third of them had children. Very few were married, actually. 2% of them were married. They had a fair amount of time spent with mental health problems. About one-third of them had a diagnosable mental health problem, most commonly post-traumatic stress disorder or depression, and then a somewhat smaller number had various kinds of substance abuse problems. Of those who had left the system, one of the main findings we have is that a lot of kids in the one state in our study that are allowed to stay in care actually remain in care. But of those who had left, 14% had been homeless at least once. And 30% of the males and 10% of the girls had spent at least a night in jail. So that's the downside. I would say, though, that you have to turn all those numbers around as well. Most of them, in fact, hadn't had any run-in with the law. Many of them, particularly those who were still in care, who remained in the care of the system at 19 and a half, were pursuing their education. Over one-third of the young people who are still in care were actually in college of some sort. And they remain very optimistic. Most of them are very optimistic about their future. Most of them still want to and expect to graduate from college. And many of them have pretty extensive ties to family and friends that can help them along the way.
Very briefly, could you identify any factor that separated the kids who were doing better from those who weren't doing so well?
Well, there are a couple of big factors. One is simply being allowed to stay in care. The gentleman who was just talked about, you know, starting early. I think there's some truth to that. But I think there's also some truth to the fact that it's really not normal these days for young people to be expected to be on their own at the age of 18. The vast majority of young people are not on their own at the age of 18, so why would we expect that of folks who mm-hmm. have had problems in their life and been taken away from their parents. So the big finding we have is that in Illinois, where in fact it's the norm for young people to remain in care, they seem to be doing much better than the folks who have left care.
When we come back from a short break, we'll continue our conversation on aging out of foster care. And we'll also be joined by folklorist and rights activist Stetson Kennedy to talk about his next project. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're finishing up our conversation about aging out of foster care. Our guests are Mark Courtney, director of the Chapin Hall Center for Children at the University of Chicago, and Roger Weisberg, writer and producer of the PBS documentary Aging Out. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Marcia. Marcia is calling from Louisville.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment. I grew up in foster care from the age of 9 until I was 21. I chose not to age out because there are a lot of benefits. At least in the state of Kentucky, there are a lot of benefits if you choose not to. And currently there's some discussion in our state legislature that they're going to try to extend health care for kids that do age out.
Mm-hmm.
Because as it stands now, if a child is 18 and they decide to exit foster care, they are pretty much cut off. Are there any other states that have situations like this going on, and how likely is this to be widespread, the health care situation for kids who are either still in foster care or getting ready to get out of foster care?
I wonder, Mark Courtney, can you help us out on this?
Sure. The federal government will pay states to extend Medicaid health coverage to folks who've aged out of foster care through age 21. Unfortunately, very few states have chosen to do that. It's great that Texas is thinking of doing that.
I think she said Kentucky.
Kentucky, I'm sorry. It's great that Kentucky's thinking of doing that. We actually found in our study that of the youth who remained in care, pretty much all of them, over 98%, had health insurance. But of those who had left care, less than half did. So mm-hmm. It's very important that either states have the kind of flexibility to allow young people to remain in care, as you did, or at least extend those kinds of basic supports like health care so that you don't decide to stay in the childwelfare system just because you need health care.
Yeah.
Marcia, you didn't say what happened with your experience.
Well, my mother and my father both are alcoholics and drug addicts. And on various and sundry occasions, I was taken away from my mom and put into foster care. And I ended up with the same foster parent each time. So I created a connection with that family, and to this day, I mean, when I talk about my mom, if you know me, you know that I'm talking about my foster mom, depending on the content of the conversation. If it's something bizarre, it's usually my real mom. If it's something normal, it's my foster mom. But these people have, you know, they took care of me through college when I went home for Christmas break. That's where I went. They paid for my wedding that I recently had. They're my parents. But I do have one other question for your guest. Something that I noticed is a big problem, because I worked with an advocacy group here in Kentucky for a while after I got out of college that was specifically for foster children. One problem that we found was that there's so much red tape that keeps foster children from reaching some of those late adolescent milestones, like getting a driver's license and getting a car. That can be a real problem for kids who are choosing not to go to college and they want to get out in the work world, because it's very difficult in some places, especially if there's not public transportation, to have those kind of resources. And I didn't get my driver's license until I was 21. I'm 24 now.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I have a job and everything, but there are some kids that don't have access to those type of resources. Is there any discussion in your study about that kind of stuff that keeps foster kids from getting to where they need to be?
Well, let's put this to Roger Weisberg. I know you didn't do a study like Mark Courtney did. You obviously talked to a lot of kids, though, who were in foster care.
I did, and nearly all of them expressed frustration with the rigidity of the system. They felt that there were rules and regulations that constrained what they could do and what they wanted to do. As Mark's study indicated, those who took advantage of some of the educational scholarships and housing subsidies and health insurance were able to do better and had statistically much better outcomes once they aged out than the ones who got so frustrated that they went AWOL and ran away and left the system. But I certainly can sympathize with what Marcia was saying about the feeling of being constrained and controlled. I think that was a universal expression among all of the youth we interviewed. And one of your callers, I must say, had worried that they had missed the documentary. I wanted to point out for everyone that the documentary airs on PBS this Thursday at 10 p.m. on most stations, and that viewers should check local listings for any anomalies out there. But it's coming up this Thursday.
Marcia, thanks for the call. Roger, thanks for that information. I did want to end by we'd asked Mark earlier about what factors he could identify, according to his study, that led some kids to do better than others. What did you find, Roger, as you talked to these kids? What did you find led some kids to do better and develop that resilience that you talked about?
I think they all had a degree of resiliency, and it's hard to always put your finger on what quality it was that enabled the ones to overcome all of the hardship and adversity in their lives. But I think if I had to reduce it to one single factor, I would have to say it was those who had somebody in their lives who cared about them. Daniela, who was on the program with you today and who was in our film, had Vesna, someone who she grew up in the system with and who became her spouse, with whom she had a child, and they were a support system for each other. And the other youth that that had consistent, caring adults in their lives could somehow cope with all of that unfortunate negative baggage. So I think it's oversimplifying, but I think it is nonetheless true that those that had somebody to care about them, as opposed to being completely adrift in the world, were the ones that could cope better with all of the difficulties of all of a sudden having to fend for themselves without the resources that it takes to be successful.
Roger Weisberg, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Roger Weisberg, the writer, director, and producer of the documentary Aging Out, joined us from our bureau in New York. Aging Out premieres on PBS stations this Thursday. You can find out more about the film through our website at npr.org. Mark Courtney, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Mark Courtney, director of the Chapin Hall Center for Children at the University of Chicago, and he was with us from NPR's Chicago Bureau.